Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Trucking Driver Podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined today by Niall Barker. How are you getting on, Niall?
Not too bad. Could be worse, could be better.
Right, now, last time I spoke to you, I was out with the Volvo 460 Turbo Compound, which that must make it round about a month or so ago, I guess, not that long ago. And since then, what have you been up to?
Well, just working mainly. I mean, last week was a good week. I managed to get up to the Highlands for the first time in a while.
Nice one.
Yes, nice. Aberdeen, Inverness, and then, via Tillicoultry, like between Alloa and Stirling, which is always a nice place to go because it's, you know, it's not next to the MA, it's out actually in the sticks somewhere.
That is that, because you've got the Ochil Hills as well. It's very picturesque, that part of Scotland, like Clackmannanshire, in between there, and as you head up to Perthshire, it's a lovely bit of the country, and it's not that, I don't think it's all that well known so much by the tourists compared to the Highlands, but it's right in the central belt there. It's one of those, Clackmannanshire's the smallest county in Scotland, I think. What's in Tillicoultry? What brought you to Tillicoultry?
Mainly garden centre stuff, like what we do. And then there's like one giant, it's sort of like a home store, furniture shop, garden centre all in one. And it's all very nice with the big steel gates in it. And then I come thundering in the lorry's like, where's the goods in?
Is that an independent?
Yeah, it's an independent. And then from there, I went up to Aberdeen, and wanted to go the 91 back to Stirling, but it was shut, so I ended up having to go on a magical mystery tour and come back out to Glen Eagles, and I knew where I was then.
No, I know it was a 91 shut for.
I don't know. It wasn't an accident. It was definitely roadworks, just they had the official signs up, so. Yes, and then after I did that, didn't quite make it to Inverness the same day, so delivered that the next day, and then loaded out of Dingwall to go down to Droitwich, which was a nice jaunt.
From Dingwall to Droitwich. That'd make a good title for a country album.
Yes, I know how to live.
Aye, no, it's good to be getting out and about the place in different locations like that. So, now, I know that prior to this podcast I was talking to you and you said you'd had a long weekend off, because if listeners don't know, you're the proud owner of an ERFEC.
Yes. I say proud owner. I'm writing the for sale ad as we speak because she's annoyed me again.
Right, so what was going on? Because I know you'd said to me you'd booked a long weekend off, and I'd said, I take it this is to maybe do some work on the ERF and get it up and ready for a busy season throughout spring and summer. So what's been happening with that?
Yeah, I've got all my application forms filled out for the shows that I'm doing, so I need to post them off. And then today I was supposed to take it to a fabrication place that I know to get the taillights moved forward, because rather than being mounted on the wheel arch, they're on the back of the chassis. And my low loader that I've got to replace my other one, it just about clears the taillights on flat ground, so the last thing I want is to be turning left at the top of a hill and smack the taillights off. So I was going to take it there today and then come to it and realise that some absolute weapon had left the battery isolator on, and then I was even more roiled to realise that said weapon was me. So batteries were dead, and then the only thing we had on the farm was 12 volt, so we tried, like, you know, charging each battery one at once, which it worked to a point. We got ignition, but no start, and then that wasn't working. So I went to went to work and borrowed one of the Volvos, and even that didn't have enough juice to take it off, so they're now currently in the workshop at work being trickle-charged, and hopefully I haven't fried anything.
Okay, no, I wouldn't imagine you'd have fried something. That really must have, whatever in the truck must have sucked the batteries right down.
Well, it's not a select, that one, so there's no ECU to kill, which is very good. If it had been me green truck with a select, I'd have been up Shite's Creek without a toilet brush.
Which you were anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so, rang a friend of mine who knows ERS, and he's like, at worst, you may have to replace many, many relays. It's like, well, I suppose relays are cheaper than an ECU.
You reckon? Surely not.
Well,
not I'm saying I'm expert on that, but I mean, it can't be that sensitive. I'll probably be all right, I would think. So hopefully the battery's charged back up. Okay.
Well, with the Volvo hooked up, they were reading -10 volts. So I don't know how that works.
If you're getting a -10 volts on your voltmeter, it generally means you've got the terminals round the wrong way around. But if you go and put the terminals the wrong way around on a battery, you soon know about it.
Yes, but then the terminals on it are quite clearly marked, and if I remember rightly, yeah. I have jumped that wagon off before.
Now, you would soon know about it if you went and put your positive and negatives back to front if you were trying to charge them. That would be quite sparky. So basically, it hasn't moved. You've got the batteries on charge.
Took the batteries off, put them on charge, and then we'll see whether I've managed to revive them or I need another set of new batteries.
Now, you've seen the price of batteries these days. It's nuts. Just for like normal batteries, just for like a car. I bought one for the Cavalier at the weekend. It was about 50 quid, and that was just a cheapie. Imagine how much the batteries are for like electric cars if that goes wrong, which is going to cost you, or an electric truck in 5 years' time. Yeesht. Because nobody knows. I mentioned that the other week as well. Nobody actually knows how much all that stuff's going to cost going forward. But what were your plans for the ERF? You were going to get the headlights moved.
The
tail lights, sorry, tail lights. Yeah, your headlights tend to be in a kind of fixed position. You can't move them.
No.
Unless you've got some really old, unless you've got one of those scammels where they're just sort of like hanging there in the middle of nowhere. So how come your tail lights are like close together on the back of the chassis? I'm trying to visualise that. Why would you do that?
No, because, well, they're like on a modern wagon, your tail lights, they're mounted on the back of the wheel arch, aren't they? And then you've got the chassis that comes out in between. And whereas on mine, they're on a separate bracket, which comes like out at the end of the chassis.
Right.
So there's like a foot gap between the wheel arch and the back of the tail light, which on a normal trailer isn't a problem. But then on my new King that I've recently bought, I don't know what that was designed for, but apart from the guy I bought it off and possibly mine, like I've already had to move the fifth wheel back, and even still, there's like an inch clearance at 45 degrees. Between the taillight and the chassis, so we're gonna get them moved.
Yeah, good idea.
Because I feel I may be buying many taillights.
Good idea. No, I can't. Yeah, I can't try to visualise that. I don't think I've seen a picture of it for the back. Oh well, at least it'll not be too hard a job to go and move the lights. Otherwise, is the truck okay? Is it behaving itself, or would it have been had it started?
Yeah, it would. It would have been perfectly fine. I mean, when I went to last time, I drove it was perfectly fine. Doing everything it should have, and then it's doing its usual thing. Like right before the season, it decides to break down, and then test my loyalty. And then once we get it sorted and back on the season, I grow to like it again. It does it every time.
That'll be good to go. That'll be fine. So, all right, now question for you: how's the standard of driving been for you over the last week? Because I've been out as well. I've been out driving that 560 Scania. And the weather was quite varied over the week. There was a lot of very heavy rain from time to time, which led to some standing water on the road. But how have other road users been over the last week or so? Just as a general question, because I was speaking to Bob Beach quite a bit last week, because we were both at Broughton's and he was driving a gas Iveco, and it just seemed to be like one bit of calamitous driving after the other.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had many people cut me off, but then I think, not last week, but the week before, I think every day it was like some sort of either road closure, traffic delay, or just horrendous volume of traffic for no reason at all.
Yeah, I think it's progressively getting worse out there. The amount of cars with that rain that we had, there must have been sort of three or four incidences of cars spinning out. There was one Ford car on the M42 at the bits where it's not far past the A42, and it must have spun out in the rain, and it had gone right up one of the, you get the high grass bankings at the side with the fence up at the top, and this thing is perched right up at the top there perfectly on all four wheels, not a mark on it, with this guy like standing outside it kind of looking bewildered as to how he's got up there. And I can only think that that's bald tyres that are doing that. People aren't putting tyres on cars, and you wonder if it goes back to cost of living crisis and are people scrimping on things here and there. And there were just cars, and then we had a bit of snow at the weekend as well. And again, cars scattered everywhere. There was like a four-car crash on the M4, trying to keep track of them all. And it just, it makes you wonder what people are doing, but they're not. The thing with driving is, I don't know, as a lorry driver, you've got a higher field of vision, so you can see further on down the road. And obviously you've got your blind spots in a lorry, but you do have certain advantages as well. You know, you can see round corners and things, you can see up top of things that people couldn't necessarily normally see. And it was just, people don't drive looking any further forward than the end of their bonnet.
Last December when I was doing the sugar beet, I had many people like looking at me like I was some sort of alien, because like I had the audacity to go down a country road, and I blocked it for 5 minutes while the mouse loaded me up. And you know, they all like shout and wave when they're in the car, but they won't actually get out and have a word. Like, especially on the sugar beet, they can quite clearly see I'm pulled up on the country road with this giant bright yellow machine that's scooping product in, so you know, I'm not there for a laugh.
It must have been people that have either moved out there or are using it as a rat run, because yes, at a few interesting places I went during the week, yeah, but who would have thought it, you know, a lorry, because you meet tractors and things in these roads as well, and the absolute fury of being held up for like 5 minutes, how dare you. Well, going back to the start of the week, because well, I had that Scania 560S. Thank you very much, Jared from Scania, for sorting me out with that. So I ended up going down to work for Toby at Broughton's, because Toby's a good guy and always got a good week's work there after my Scottish option no longer exists. So have you driven much in the way of Scanias?
I dabbled with the new gens when I wrote the range. It was like a mix between the new gen and the last of the old shape, like 65, 16 plates. Mm-hmm. Then since the start of 2020 was the last time I drove a new shape Scania.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I was quite pleased to get in this one. With the 560, it's the 13-litre, it's a super engine. So it's our highest output. And, you know, it's encroaching into V8 territory. It certainly, I mean, we know with V8s that for a lot of people, nothing else will do. You've got to have the V8. And it's not just an emotional decision in some cases. It can be a financial decision, because it's a cast iron asset that's going to be worth money even like 5 years down the line with an enormous mileage on it. You know it's going to be worth something. But I was very impressed last year when I had the 460R. Which was a fleet spec truck. It had steel suspension on the front, steel on the cab, and I couldn't believe how well that 460 pulled. Yeah, it would have passed for a 500 no problem at all. So this is the other end of the scale. You get the 500 in the middle, and now you get the 560. S-cab, very nicely spec'd. It had air suspension on the front and air on the cab. Microwave, coffee maker, yeah, just a leather seat, hot and cold, or the usual gubbins. And yeah, it was exactly what I expected it to be. Plenty of performance, and the overdrive box works really well. What I found with the overdrive box is it'll settle 950 RPM at 56 miles an hour on the motorway, and then it'll flick itself into 12th if it detects like an uphill section. And actually, if it, you could probably manually hold it in overdrive, because sometimes it would flick down and you would think it didn't really need to when it was like empty or very lightly loaded. So plenty of power. It did 9.7 mpg over the course of the week. Most of that was medium loads. I got a decent heavy load down from Yorkshire down to Bristol towards the end of the week. But 9.7 general haulage stuff, you can't knock that. Obviously, if I was doing the work I did with that Volvo previously, it wouldn't have got anywhere near that. But it's still a very impressive overall figure for the week. But the one thing I find about these, the S-Cab Scania, with this one being a tag axle as well, they're wobbly. It's quite floaty on the corners and things. It's a bit better when you've got some weight in it, but like flat floor cabs by their nature, I've always found to be a bit kind of floaty in the Scania. You were kind of like sawing at the steering on bits where the camber's off and things. Not the most precise thing. The R-Series cab is the driver's truck. It's the one that would be better and more planted around the corners, but then again, you're not getting that gigantic cab. And of course, there's a bigger cab on the way as well with the not XXL. What is it Scania called? I can't remember what they call it. Yeah, it's the Mega Big. Mega Big. That's what it's called. The Mega Big cab.
I can just imagine people having Mega Big in big letters on the illuminated headboard.
I think that's quite a cool term, actually. No, I just think about it. Mega Big.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that goes with a fridge on, because, like, yeah, the cab goes in, like, it dips into the air kit, then it doesn't actually make it the entire truck any longer, but then if you've got a close coupled fridge, you usually need that gap in between the air kit for the fridge motor to go in.
Oh, yeah, good point. I'll have to go and set it a bit further back. Right enough. I know nobody's ever thought about that. Well, I suppose somebody has thought about it, but we've not thought about it in the podcast before. Yeah, interesting one, that. Because, yeah, Scania and Volvo, they've got their Mega Bigs coming out later in the year, which, you know, no doubt there'll be a queue for them as well, as people want some sort of real premium equipment. Useful thing to have if you're a big guy. You could be, it could be useful for you. I find that the Scania S-Cab's phenomenal space-wise. Fit everything in there for a week away with space to spare. That cab's got the capability for you to run for more than 1 week with all your luggage and everything in it. So, yeah, very comfortable. I enjoyed it. Say, hard to knock it aside from that inherent wobbliness that you get, but that's not so much the truck's fault. That's the spec if you want a gigantic cab and a magic carpet ride, because it did do very well going over all the different undulations and holes in the road that you get everywhere. But I think, where did I go? How did I start off? I went to pick up some bricks. Oh yes, I remember what I did. Yeah, to kick the week off, Bob and I went round to a place and we went and picked up a load of stainless steel, like, industrial equipment, which is, now get this, it was all made in Britain and it was being exported to Japan.
It is rather odd. Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, it's the other way around. Japanese electronics and things. But yeah, it was made somewhere in Wiltshire. So off we went into this place, picked up all this industrial equipment, and I went and, where did I go to tip that? Oh yes, I went to a place over by Worcester somewhere. Went in there, and that, yeah, I had to do two circuits of the industrial estate to wait until there was enough space to get backed in. And then I went to get some bricks from a place. I had two pickups to go, and it was go in there, get the first pickup, and then go across to Tamworth to get the second one. Into the first one, I've booked you in for tomorrow. This is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I've booked you in for tomorrow. Can you just come back tomorrow at 2, please? Am I going to make a phone call? No. I guess in the office they don't know if you're just going home for the night or something. But so I went back in. By the time we'd mucked about there, I managed to get half a load of bricks on. Then I had to go across to Tamworth to load bricks. And once again, I was banging on the other week about warning signs for roads that you cannot ultimately drive down. And there's no warnings at the top of the roads until you get to the point where you can't drive. And I was looking for somewhere to park for the night, and I found an industrial estate somewhere in Tamworth. But as I drove down to the end of that road, no warnings. I thought I could get to the brick place. And I consulted the map as usual. The map doesn't have any details in it. You can't go there. Down to the bottom, a mini roundabout, and then there's a sign saying no HGV access, unsuitable for it. There's not even 7.5 tons access, unsuitable for HGVs. So I had to turn the thing round at this mini roundabout, and that was tight, especially with me. Well, it was worse for me being paranoid after snagging the two electric Susies in the front of that Volvo. So, of course, it made it round, but it was tight, and I'm thinking, would you get, what if you had something else, like a wagon and drag or something, would you get that turned there? The wagon and drag's turned in the same space. I don't know. You ever driven a wagon and drag?
No, I haven't. I've driven an 8-wheeler for an hour or two, but never a wagon and drag.
No, but once again, how about a couple of signs at the top of the 2-mile road that you drive down, only to discover you cannot drive any further? That's how people get into bad situations. But thankfully, I was able to turn around, and I got in an industrial estate just up there. And then I went to get my bricks the following morning and broke my phone. My very expensive Sony Xperia, which I've had for 2 years, fell out my pocket at the brick place, like the driver's bit with the door. And then I realised I couldn't find it. And I've got a second phone. I've got like a little, I've got a cheap Motorola as like a backup. And I couldn't find my phone. So I went like running back for the lorry, ringing it. And I went and checked where the lorry was, hoped I hadn't been run over. It hadn't been back into this office. I was phoning it, and I couldn't find it. And then eventually I found it because it was wedged in the door check with this door leaning on it and crushing the top of the screen. And I was like, wonderful. So my phone screen was crushed with a big black bit of LCD in the top corner. But then I remembered it was insured, which was good. I never usually take the phone insurance out, but with the cost of them now and the amount of time you're required to have them on contract, I took the insurance out. So I'm currently waiting for BT to come and pick it up. They said they were going to pick it up on Monday, and they haven't. So that's great. So yeah, I managed to wreck my phone, but thankfully, because always people say, ask you if you're like dealing drugs or if you're having an affair because you've got two phones, and I'm like, nah, I'm just too dependent on having that phone. It's got everything in it. I'd be screwed without it. So it's just handy to have a backup phone. You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah. You got any opinions on backup phones? You got a work phone or an?
No, we'd have a work phone. We're done entirely through WhatsApp. So, I mean, I think it was about a year ago when EE's network went down, and I thought it was my phone that knacked, and it's like, well, you know, I've got my load on, but then 9 times out of 10, I don't know what I'm doing until like I'm nearly doing it. So, I parked at Teen Valley outside the Sainsbury's that night, and just about managed to get onto their Wi-Fi and order me sending a new phone. Cause it's like, I just texted the boss. It's like, tell me what I'm doing tomorrow now, because I won't have a phone for the entire day. And it turned out not to be my phone that was knacked. It was the network, but I'd already bought the new phone at this point.
It's just horrendous how dependent we are on phones for like everything. Like, the reason I went and got the second phone was my previous Sony had just randomly stopped working down in England, and I was just absolutely screwed. It just stopped getting signal like altogether. And that's why I actually had to go into the services to get Wi-Fi to go and contact a couple of people to say, I'm not contactable. And then I was like, you know what, I'm just going to get myself a backup just in case of emergency. And it came in handy this week. But like, even like your sort of cheaper, lower end Android smartphones now are pretty, you know, they're pretty good. Like this would have been like top of the range sort of a few years ago. It would have been like epic spec, and it just I can't even remember how much it cost me. It wasn't even 100 quid, I don't think. So that's handy to have that. And curiously, because I was like, I wonder, I went and got my other Sony, which is an Xperia 1. And I don't know why, like, Sony are so successful with electronics and everything, and they've got like 1% of the smartphone market for some reason. And I always liked them. They're like a bit, they're a bit different. But I got my Sony Xperia 1, which has been like a brick for 2 years because it just decided not to work and not get any signal one day. So I fired it up, not hoping for anything. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to try and like clean it. So I took the SIM card thing out and I took well, you can't really dismantle phones anymore either. You used to be able to get into the battery in them and everything, eh? So I took the SIM card and the memory thing out and blasted some like compressed air out of one of those duster cans in there, and it worked.
Yeah, I don't get Sony. I had a Sony phone for a bit in college. I mean, to be honest, it was actually a bit crap. Like it was all right. It was all right when it was new, but it didn't age very well.
No, was that a Sony Ericsson?
No, it was an Xperia. Can't remember the model.
Xperia, and then
I got rid of that and got a Huawei, which was...
Oh, you're not allowed them anymore.
Yeah, which was okay until the screen died and the price for the screen was twice what the phone was worth.
Yeah, but they like banned them, didn't they? Because they've got like potential to have like Chinese spyware on them or something, allegedly. I don't know if anything that came out of that. But you remember... There's a few phone brands. Remember HTC?
Vaguely.
That was my first smartphone back in 2012. It was an HTC, and it was quite bulky. It seemed like enormous at the time, but it was just amazing, like all the stuff it could do back then. It was just, phenomenal. And HTC was one of the like brands to have, and they've disappeared off the face of the... off the face of the earth as well. It's all Samsung and Apple now. What have you got?
Currently, I've got a Samsung. I've got a Galaxy 22.
How are you going with that?
Yeah, it's not too bad. It does the job. It's fallen out of the truck at least once, and it's gone down the stairs many times, and it's still going strong. So
yeah, oh, well, that's good. If it's quite tough, like I always got a case and a screen protector for my phones, but if you go and jam one in a wooden door that opens and closes with a fire break on it, then it's not gonna help. But yeah, like, I'm just having a look at this Xperia 1 now that I thought was that it was in fact it was bricked. I don't know why it's working again, because I tried everything. I tried blowing air into it and everything like that to try and get it to work again, and then suddenly it just started working. It's got 4G plus. It's got the Wi-Fi is working on it and everything. And it's actually, it was only like a year old when I stopped using it. So it's actually got less mileage on it than the new one, they're going to have to replace it with a new one anyway. I think the other one's too wrecked, unfortunately. So, which is a shame, but at least with the insurance, I should get a brand new phone out it. I hope. But I did spend an hour on hold to them. O2 have got some of the worst hold music you could ever imagine, because my insurance policy says it's an iPhone. So I phoned them up and said, it's not an iPhone, it's an Xperia 3. Oh, right. I mean, went through all the details, gave them all the details for everything. They're like, all right, we need to answer to your security question. I'm like, and no, they wanted like the second, the fifth, and the eighth characters from my security question. Like security word, and I was like, do you have a hint? Because I had no idea what the word was. And I've given them everything. I've given them my name, my address, my details. I'm phoning from the phone. I had the IMEI number for the phone and everything. And they we can't do it without that security question. I'll have to put you back through to customer services. So I spent an hour on hold to them, which was just wonderful of them. So, and the phone's still not being picked up anyway, so... I don't know. The other phone's on Voxy, which is Vodafone UK, which is handy if you've got two different networks as well, because if one's not getting signal, its chances are the other one might be.
Yeah, I've been on EE since day one, I think, and then I do debate changing now and again, but then they always come back. It's like, oh yeah, we've got the best coverage in your area. It's like, yes, but I'm very rarely in my area.
Yeah, is that... I used to be on 1-to-1 was what I was having to begin with back in like 1999, and I've always had the same number throughout that time. And then that became T-Mobile, and then they skanked. In fact, T-Mobile told me, I went through the whole length of my contract. Oh, and I remember this. I went through the whole length of my contract. So I was then, you know, you're allowed to upgrade once your contract's completed. And T-Mobile turned around and said, no, you have to do another 2 months because, you're not valuable enough a customer. Well, literally. And this was like the mid-2000s or something like that, where all the phone contracts were like a year. So I was like, oh, well, screw you then. I'm away somewhere else, like to O2. But yeah, the contracts, the deals are like rubbish now. Did you ever mind getting free gifts with your phone?
Yeah, I did for the longest time. I think I got one when I first got this, and like, you know, the reason I've kind of stuck with EE is because I can get unlimited everything on it, which, you know, I remember when I was in college, I'd get like 2 gig of data for the month, and you know, I get the text message on the first saying that my phone bill's gone out, and then I get it like, you know, not even 24 hours later on the second, and it's like, you've used 2 gig of data already. It's like, well, that didn't last very long, did it?
No, well, you can go through so much data. I've got 100 gig of data on this contract now, just to keep it clear. But you used to get amazing gifts. I got an Xbox 360 as a gift with my phone contract back in like, oh, when was that? Must have been about sort of 2009, I think. Incredible. Just, I mean, imagine getting something like that with your phone now. You get nothing now. I just got a message through saying they were putting it up with inflation, like the retail price index, and they were putting another like 3 or 4% on it just because they felt like it. And they do that every year, these gits. But they've got you over a barrel. You can't really do anything about it, can you?
Yes, almost as bad as car insurance.
I've got a trader's policy, so I have heard a lot of people's insurance have been going up. I mean, well, you've got a Corsa VXR, eh?
Yeah, I think it was there's a cat here. It's around Christmas time when mine renewed, and then it.
Yeah, I'm the same.
It had gone up. Well, they wanted to take mine up from 450 to like north of 700, and it's like, no, that's not going to happen. And then, so I rang them. Exactly. It's like, oh, well, you know, prices go up on that. It's like, yeah, not by 400 quid.
Prices go up. No, they shouldn't with insurance if you had a claim-free year.
Yeah, it's like the car has done nothing. Like, it does a mile and a half to work on a Monday, sits in the yard all week, and then does a mile and a half home on the Friday. Like, I could probably get away without it. I mean, obviously I don't. So managed to shop around, and the best I could get was 520. And then, like, even when I was on the phone with the insurer, they said, oh, yeah, well, try and have a go around. It's like, right, well, best price I can get is 520. Then they come back and said, best we managed to get it is, like, from 740 down to 7. It's like, well, that's not 5, is it? If they can do it for 520, why can't you?
Yeah, pathetic. You know why they do that. I mean, a lot of insurance companies are just blagging it. They're just hoping that it's too much hassle to go and change. I'm glad that my trader's policy has stayed very static over the years. It never really moved, which is good. I dread it because it has to get paid on the 30th of January, 30th of December every year, sorry. And yeah, I dread it coming through 1 year and it's going up massively. So the cost of everything's up. Like, truck insurance is up as well, and it's really difficult to insure young drivers on trucks as well. And if any, I don't think the parameters are the same with insuring a young person on a truck is the same as like a high performance car, because the insurers need to look a bit further into the individual cases, and you'll probably find that a lot of these kids that are got their licenses at young ages are like really into vehicles and probably have been like shunting them about for a long time. So the insurers, I mean, you're not looking for like miracles, but certainly the way that they load premiums to make it more difficult for hauliers to employ young drivers is not on. It's not fair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lad I know, he's actually older than me. He's 29, 30-ish, but then he's only just had his class one for a year. He did it through a scheme with a big company. Then it's like, you know, they trained him, gave him the license. And they were like, oh, well, we can train you, but we can't give you a job because we can't insure you. It's like, well, I thought that was the entire point of having a big company training school.
Yes.
But then he ended up getting a job with like an independent, like, you know, he had like four or five wagons, you know, doing ferry freight. But it's like, if he went directly to the ferry company, they wouldn't insure him. It's like, well, hang on, if he can't get on at the big company that can actually, like, you know, afford costs, so to speak, but then he can get on at the smaller one, which is, you know, so
ridiculous. Like, that just comes down to that ferry company. That's not can't insure, that's won't insure.
Yeah.
Really unsupportive, out of order.
Yeah, because it's, you know, like, well, he would, I think he must have tried like every haulage company between like Penrith and Penzance. And I mean, I'm glad to say now he is at quite a decent spot and he's loving life, but it was, you know, just that initial first couple of hurdles. And it's like, you know, they're crying out for drivers. You go and do your test. It's like, oh no. And then I think he said like now they've changed it, so you don't have to do your reversing. It's like, yeah, you still do have to do your reversing. It's just not on test. And, you know, I think like by trying to solve one problem, they've created another.
Yep.
As to how true that is, I don't know, but it's what he told me.
Yeah, but it's not as it's always been difficult for people to get started with things. Like when I passed my class two, basically all you were getting was 7.5 tonne of work for a long time, until eventually somebody would like, yeah, okay, we'll take a, it was all agency work, is okay, we'll take a chance on this guy today. And then once you kind of had your foot in the door with that, it became easier. The Arctics were different. That was pretty much straight in, because it was like sort of word of mouth starts. I was quite fortunate to get a couple of people who were like, yeah, we'll give you a shout, we'll give you a go, no problem at all, which was fine. But it can be frustrating to get that first start, and it's often been able about to get a foot in the door and hoping that some people seem to encounter problems with insurance when they're first like starting out, especially younger drivers. Very frustrating. But did you see in the news today that the government, I don't know if you're familiar with these truck stops or not, but there was, the government are supplying £16 million at this point into, so a whole £16 million. What does that get you? Not very far these days, but it's better than a poke in the eye.
I have heard there's one open down Felixstowe way, like I think it was like this last week that it's opened.
All right, I didn't know about that. Truck stop. We'll look into that in a minute. Yorkshire truck stops get share of £16 million for improvements. Bit of news. Lorry drivers in Yorkshire have been promised better facilities. Well, you know, the lorry drivers in Yorkshire probably wouldn't need these facilities because they're from Yorkshire so much. Well, overnight parking anyway. £16 million cash injection into truck stops across England. Is that it? £16 million? Come on, you can do better than that. How much are, you know, that wouldn't even cover one missile. Five service stations in North and West Yorkshire have been awarded a combined total of more than £900,000. Now, it's worth noting here, these are already existing facilities, so they're not new facilities, and it's also the big boys as well. The Department of Transport said the scheme would furnish 38 truck stops in England with improved rest areas, welfare facilities and parking. I think we should be doing by putting a zero or two in the end of that £160 million, really. But it's three service stations in West Yorkshire to receive over £500,000. That's £175,000 for Exelby and Whipwood, £291,000 for Moto Services in Woolley Edge, and £36,300 for Ferrybridge. What's £36,000 going to get you? In North Yorkshire, Moto's Weatherby Services to receive £112,500 government funding, with Leaming Bar getting £315,000. So, I say that's all the big, it's Exelby and Moto, it's the big boys that are getting it, and it's existing sites. And while absolutely anything is welcomed, it would be useful, it would be good to see some of the independents, and it would be good to see them helping get new sites and facilities over the line. There's plenty of these big mega retail, like warehousing developments popped up at the sides of the motorway here, there, and everywhere. Why aren't we having truck parking added on to that? You know, Amazon's one of the worst for all of that. Amazon, you know, they go and put their enormous warehouse facilities in, and then they don't, and then this attracts loads and loads and loads of trucks to the local area. It makes life difficult, not only for the locals, but it makes life difficult for the other people in the industrial area, and it's hard to get parked, and they don't really offer things like in Dunfermline up there. They really should have had like a full-on truck park set up, and I think eventually some waste ground was allocated to it. So I don't, do you use any of those sites? Do you go into any of those places?
Yeah, we do a bit for them, and like the site for Dunfermline, I think they only opened that as like an overflow. It went between like October and December.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, like, you know, they do have like showers and toilets on it, but as for food, I think it's a case of bring your own, which is like, you know, at least.
No, good. They have put showers and toilets on it. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, at least they're doing something. But then going back to like the big ones, I mean, Exelby's are usually quite sound because, like, you know, Exelby's have got Coney Garth, they've got Golden Fleece, and they're usually all right. But then some moto sites are quite good. Most of them are crap. But then welcome breaks are going downhill very rapidly.
I've stopped a couple of them recently. Yeah. Leaming Bar's the rest area with the Shell station on it, isn't it? Yeah. And 315,000 is the biggest single investment in all of that. So I wonder if they're maybe going to expand it a bit. There's a one on the other side of the road as well, where the McDonald's is. And that was like where you go down the big dip to get into it from like the coach.
The splitter killer.
Take when I get into that. But the last time I was in there was last year, and it was free to park in there because there was like no kind of facilities available at the time. So I wonder what Leaming Bar's going to get. I have parked in there a couple of times, but not overnight. I just got in and got a shower and then driven around the corner to the other place because it was like free.
Yeah, I've nighted out at the Shell garage many times, but then I've only ever been into the little one with the McDonald's for like breaks and stuff.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder what improvements will be made. I don't know what 36 grand's going to get. Who's getting 36 grand? Woolley Edge. Woolley Edge and Ferry Bridge are getting the same amount of money from that. But, you know, 16 million, it's like not very much at all. I say there's still, like, obviously, Scotland's not part of that because it's a different area. But Lockerbie's been shut and it's just sitting empty, which is just a travesty. But there's certainly hot spots in the country where you need to have new sites built. Of course, there's all problems with planning, permission, and there's the sheer cost as well, but the overheads to run these places. Oh, I said truck stops should have an exemption on council tax rates because of the sheer amount of space which they take up.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is in Scotland, there's very few industrial estates that are covered in yellow lines and cameras.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with a lot of industrial estates, isn't it? They've got more and more of them seem to have double yellows in them saying you're not allowed to park here for the night. That's why I was quite surprised when I was in Tamworth where I got parked in a decent spot for the night. I was like, oh, you can actually just park up here. This is all right.
Yeah, like the big Royal Mail site at the side of the M1, like down Milton Keynes area. It's like, you know, they've got a huge lorry park there, but then you can only park there if you're delivering to that particular logistics park. So it's like, you know, there's like 75 odd spaces with like three trucks in it, and there's the rest of them. It's like, oh, you have to, you know, to go park on the road. It's like, well, what's the point in having the parking area here if you don't let anyone use it?
Mm. Yeah, not good.
We've built the industrial estate with all this parking here. It's like, but yeah, there's more than just you here.
Yeah, not good that. I wasn't in any sort of truck parking all week. I was I was at Tamworth, and then where was I on the Tuesday? I was at Key Park at Merthyr Tydfil for a night. That would have been Thursday night, which was okay. I guess I was in Barnstaple for a night as well, because I actually texted you because I went into this brick place and I did the usual thing. I checked it out on Google Maps Street View to see what I was driving into, and I could see, I was like, this looks like a reverse in with cars parked either side of the road. So I phoned ahead and they said, yes, you've got a reverse in. So I got to the place, and then super busy industrial estate with people flying around the corners like all the time. So I had one attempt at trying to reverse back, and then I had a Corsa that drove up to the back of the trailer and wanted to get in to the entrance after the one I was trying to reverse in, and they just sat there like a dick. So I had to go and move forward to let them in. Then I was like, this is too tight. So I went in and got the guy, and I said, here, you're going to have to go and stop the traffic to help me get reversed back in here. I tell you, that was tight. If he wasn't there, I would have been struggling, because I was just inches off the cars on the offside trying to get the thing in. The trailer wheel was up on the kerb at the other side, the near side trailer wheels, to go and squeeze the thing in. And I said to the guy, I says, that's tight to get in there. I said, and he said, yeah, it is. Says, I've had loads of lorries have hit cars over the years there. So I was like, oh. He said, we've asked the council several times, can we get double yellows put there, or like, you know, parking restrictions or something. And, well, we're talking about double yellows in an industrial estate, but this is literally blocking an entrance and making it difficult to get in. But then I'd said to the guy at the end, I says, is there anywhere here like for facilities that I can get a wash? Or he says, nah, there's nothing around here, mate. So I ended up parked in a lovely four-star lay-by on the A39 in Barnstable. I cannot believe the traffic in Devon. How is it so busy? How many people live in Devon for the traffic to be non-stop from the moment I parked up?
The A39 is the only road in Devon, so that's half the problem.
Yeah, just insanely busy. So I was in that lay-by, and then I text you, you said there's actually a place in there called Barnstable Van Park.
Yeah, I went in there before, because I was on my way down, and a colleague of mine said you could park at this place, but then I couldn't find it, and then I did find it, but then they've since changed it, and then seen one of these Facebook groups, and it's like, oh, there's a lorry park outside Tesco. Like, mint. Went to Tesco, couldn't find it. Turns out there's two Tescos in Barnstable, and I was at the wrong one.
Yeah.
So eventually found it.
And yeah,
it was like a caravan, like a, you know, like a coach type caravan park in there. But mm-hmm. then, you know, the space is big enough for trucks as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you're parking like in there, you could have got out the truck and gone for a walk and gone to the shops or something like that, I would assume.
Yeah, it's literally like round the back of the big Tesco store, and you're like, you were in the centre of Barnstable. So if you didn't fancy supermarket food, you could have gone for a wander into town.
Well, supermarket food would have. Well, I went to the petrol station, the BP up the top of the road, and grabbed. I had stuff in the truck anyway, but I was just isolated in that lay-by, and it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I got a text, yeah, they'll load you at 9 in the morning. So I was like, oh, well, I'm here for a while then. But thankfully, it was one of the lay-bys that was set back from the road. I will avoid lay-bys that are directly at the side of the road at all costs. You just can't get a decent night's rest in one of them. It's really as a last resort. But curiously enough, it was about 10 o'clock at night. I was reading my Kindle, and this buzzing started in the cab. It was a massive wasp in the cab in February. So that was me jumping up in terror. I had flung the door of the truck open in that, and I think it went out, as far as I know. I wasn't sure. That was the worst of it. I wasn't even sure if it had gone out. Terrifying. There's nothing worse than having there's very few things worse than having a wasp suddenly appear in the cab of your truck. You know, I'm sure that's probably caused accidents in the past, where people being terrified of having a wasp in there. I did have some brake cleaner with me. I always carry brake cleaner as part of my kit, mainly because it'll take grease off if you get grease on your clothing and then, God forbid, somewhere in the truck. Brake cleaner, as a tip, kills wasps instantly. Just wipes them out. So, yeah, I don't know where Mr. Waspy went. Maybe it was one of those queen wasps that were like looking to make a nest. I don't know, but yeah, Barnstable Van Parking, folks. If you're in the Barnstable area, remember that that's there. And if you search truck parking, it doesn't come up.
Yeah, we've kind of knackered it now, because come the time I'll be down there again, it'll be full.
Yeah, that's the thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so then there was only like, I think there's only like four or five spaces there anyway, so.
Hopefully, well, not that many people would know about it, but there you go. The truck and driver loyal will know about it now. But, the place I was loading the following morning, was I was loading like animal feed, so you had to go through this little village, tight roads, of course, down there, around the first corner, boom, folded the near side mirror in on a bloody overhanging tree branch. Perfect shot. You folded it in so neatly. I was like, ah. So that was me, line of traffic behind me. So, of course, I had to go and put the hazards on, jump across the other side of the cab, fold it out. And by this point, like, people are, like, raging because I've just stopped swerving out past me and got the hazards off, indicator on, and they're all still sailing past. So down this single-track road that if you'd met something else on it, it would have been trouble into the yard. Yeah, I'm like, what do you do here? Do you spin around in this yard? Yes. You guys like, yeah, you should be all right. You should probably manage it. I'm like, probably is not what I want to hear. And I got round, but it was tight. In retrospect, I probably should have disconnected the sluices and used the shunt button. That's how tight it was. And it was quite new a yard as well. I'm thinking, who designs places like this? Well, you don't think you're on a farm. You've got plenty of space. Just make it, you know, a couple of meters either side wider. So yeah, I got out of there okay. It wasn't too bad. I'm trying to rack my brains where else I was parked during the week. Yes, I was at Thirsk. I was down from Thirsk. That's where it was. I ended up.
You messaged me about somewhere to park around there, didn't you?
Yeah, because you mentioned the A19 earlier in the week.
Yeah.
And because I went all the way up to. Well, it was a difficult day on the Thursday. We were late leaving. Loading out the place to go up to Darlington. There were a few delays. I was trailer will be ready at 9, went in, trailer will be ready at 11, went back in at 11. No, your trailer's still sitting in the yard. You might as well go and collect it and put it in a bay. And I was like, great. So I went with the trailer in the bay, got the stuff together. Then it transpired there'd been an accident on the M50, and when you come out of Merthyr, you've got to head along the 50, and then eventually you'll hook up with the M5, but we couldn't do that because it was shut at Junction 2. And I'm sad to say there was a terrible accident where a driver sadly lost his life that day. I believe it was an eight-wheeler tipper had run into the back of an Arctic, and investigations are currently ongoing. But it was that road was shut for like half the day, and they'd left people sitting on the road for like 9 hours, I think, and eventually they got the trucks, because the M50 is only two lanes, they got the trucks to move either side. There wasn't enough space to spin them, so like the cars and vans were able to turn around, and there was people there. There was like reports in the news of people there that had like disabled children in the car. There was a guy who was 81 years old who'd been there with like no food or water or anything like that, who'd been stuck there for ages, and the poor chap in the lorry sadly passed away at the scene. So investigations are ongoing into that, but it was a really, really terrible accident. The investigations are ongoing into what exactly happened with that. I came off at Junction 2 and went up round by Ledbury. And somehow, I don't know how I ended up doing it, but I tried to get round Ledbury and I ended up round the wrong side, and it said 7.5 tons except for access. So I ended up going down through Ledbury, naughty, through the main, but turned left and went and headed up towards Malvern, which was a fun route. And eventually I got on, then there was more accident. There was another accident on the 42. When people have a very, very minor bump in the outside lane of a four-lane motorway or whatever, you know, and then they just get out and stand there and wait. It's like, well, your cars aren't badly damaged. Take some photos and move on, or get the thing over to the hard shoulder or to a rest area. Why do they all sit like that when it's such a minor tap? But yeah, eventually I got up to Darlington and got out of there, and I didn't have enough time to get across to Driffield where I was going next. So I decided, looked at my map again for Thirsk and figured out I could come off at this junction, and then I came off at the junction, drove along the road for about 5 miles, got to Thirsk, 7.5 tons weight limit everywhere. So I was like, why was there no warning coming off the A1M for that? I had to go down to the next junction to pick up the M, or the A168 or something, I can't remember, then drive along to pick up the A19. Drove down the A19 and I got myself a good spot on there. It was one of those situations where you could keep driving further on, but you've still got to take 9 hours off, so you're starting later in the morning. There's no advantage to it. So I managed to get parked there for the night, which was very quiet and nice. It was a beautiful morning when I woke up, sun, frost, gorgeous. Then by the time I got back out of Driffield onto the M18, it was torrential rain for most of the day. And then we had snow and rainbows and everything. It was mental.
Yeah, I had a similar situation with that last week when I was on my way from Dingwall. I'd had a perfect rundown, the customers at Dingwall, they were dead on. They were like the nicest possible people you could ever meet, which is it's rare to turn up at a place in the lorry and people to be nice to you. Which the way you talk to some drivers, you'd think they get shot at all the time, but I very rarely have a problem with customers.
So I'd
loaded dead on, then rattled down there. It was lovely and sunny down the A9. Then got to junction 31 on M6, like Preston sort of area, and all of a sudden come to a grinding halt. And then, like I said, 3 out of 4 lanes closed. It's like, oh, well, this is wonderful. And it took me like 40 minutes to do a mile. And then we'd eventually got through it. And then at that point, I was already over. I was on 8.5 hours. So I thought I could probably get to Lim, but I'd have to park on the roof of the hotel. So knocked into Charnock Richard. And then there was still actually quite a few spaces in Charnock Richard. I actually don't think it got full for that night. But then, I just about managed. I managed to get in, and then you can usually tell what people are doing. There was a giant queue of trucks behind me trying to get in, and find the spaces here, there, and everywhere.
Mm.
Because
they'd all been in the same situation. They're getting stuck up at 31.
Yeah, because there is that little Shell garage at Junction 59. On the A59, but then you can't exit that one southbound. You have to go down a junction, turn around, and come back. And it's like, well, if I go down, turn around, and come back, and it's full, I have to fight through all this traffic again.
It was like
8:30 at night. So it's like, well, if I have a break here and then carry on again, if I'm having a break, I might as well just have a full break and start again in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Which worked out in my favor, because we're straight down to Droit, which got there, and they told me, it's like, you're booked for 11 o'clock, but if you get there early, that shouldn't be a problem. It's like, yeah, not a problem. So got there at about 8:30 when they opened, and they're like, is there anyone in front here? Like, no, just me. Like, right, well, bring it in. We'll get you tipped double quick. So that was a nice bonus.
Yeah, it's good. It's good that when things run in your favour. Poor old Bob Beach had a difficult week with that gas Iveco. He had numerous delays and difficulties with things. It was just, when the dominoes start falling against you, it just keeps on going for the rest of the week. And sometimes you get on a run where everything just keeps clicking on nicely. But pretty much all the customers and places I went to over the last week were friendly enough. The builder's merchant place were like, do you want a cup of tea or coffee? Same with the animal feed place as well. Went and filled my flask and water bottle up and things. It was all quite nice. I love to work out what work I can do next. I know in May I'm out doing the tankers, which will be quite excited and looking forward to that. Should be a good experience. So yeah, I'll have to go and work out what to do. I still haven't emptied the car from all my stuff from the weekend. The worst of it is just when you're fully rigging out the truck for a week and everything you've got to load in and load out. But at least I've got it all kind of bagged up together now, not breaking it all down fully. I'm just leaving it in bags sitting in the spare room. So we shall see what I can get. See what I can get up to next time out. But that's us hitting the hour mark on this now. What's your plans for the coming week? You've been off recording this on a Monday. You've been off work today. Is that you back out tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm back at work tomorrow. And speaking of all your gear out the lorry, I've currently got everything in my car packed. It looks like I live in my car at the minute.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. You've got the duvet and the bedding all packed in the back seat. It does look like, you've been thrown out the house.
I'm back tomorrow, and then, well, hopefully at the weekend I'll take my batteries off the charger, and hopefully the lorry will work.
I'm sure it will, yeah. You'll have to mind that isolator switch, because it's definitely got something. If it can suck the power right out it to the point you've not got ignition lights, you've got something ticking away ticking away on there.
Yeah, well, I can usually leave it for a day or two. Like at a, you know, if I'm parked up at a show, I have the isolator on, then I can have my phone plugged in and that. But then I think 5 weeks in winter by itself kind of nailed it. I mean, at least, you know, like I said before, at least on that one, there's no ECU on it to fry, because it's the old shape manual one.
Surely, I don't think.
You know, I think if I'd have left the Volvo for 5 weeks and let it go down, I'd have been in a whole world of pain.
Yeah, you do have to be a little bit mindful over things like that. No, I'm sure. I think it'll be all right. Fingers crossed. Tough old things. Those ERFs. So I'd put a shout out in social media last week for future material. We got a response from that. If you're listening and you'd like your truck to be in Trucking Driver, give us a shout. Get in contact with us. We are looking for new feature material of all shapes and sizes, from brand new 24 plate stuff all the way through. In particular, I'm kind of on the lookout for pre-Euro 6 yet still modern stuff that's still running. So Euro 4s and 5s and stuff, you know, version 3 Volvos, even, you know, Renault Premiums, stuff that's suddenly getting rare in a lot of parts of the country. That you don't see too much anymore. But as by rights, with the lifespan, a lorry should have a good long lifespan. It shouldn't be done after 6 to 8 years. Trucks should be running at 15 years old, to my mind. With the technology and everything that's involved in them, I think things should be refurbished and repowered if necessary, rather than us getting rid of it. But the move to Euro 6 went and canned all of that, pretty much, with the banning of them from ULEZ zones and things. But there you go. Anyway, cool. Well, thanks very much for catching up with us. We shall catch up with the rest of you guys soon. Take care. Drive safe. Catch you the next time.
See you after.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trucking Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.